You're listening to ESL Podcasts, English Cafe, number 41. This is English as a Second Language Podcast's English Cafe. I'm your host, Dr. Jeff McQuillan, coming to you from the Center for Educational Development in beautiful Los Angeles, California. Go to our website at eslpod.com to get the complete transcript as well as the definitions and sample sentences for all the terms we use in this podcast. Today's podcast is going to be about tipping. We're also going to talk about museums, famous museums, and vocabulary related to museums. And as always, we're going to answer some of your questions. Let's get started. I took a little trip last weekend back to my home state, back to Minnesota, to visit my parents. My father had his 83rd birthday party, and my mother is also celebrating her birthday this summer. We had a combined party, since I live in Los Angeles and everyone else but my sister lives in Minnesota. We have to go back to Minnesota, fly back there. Takes about 3.5 hours if you go on a direct flight, a direct D-I-R-E-C-T flight is one where you don't have to stop anywhere else. We would say you don't have any layovers. And a layover, L-A-Y-O-V-E-R, is when you have to stop in a different city before you get to the city where you want to go. Well, we had a very good time, and we rented a car and stayed in a little hotel. And one of the things that you notice when you travel is whether or not you should tip someone. To tip, T-I-P, means to give someone who is helping you money, such as a person in a restaurant, the waiter, or the person driving your taxi cab, if you take a taxi cab, and so forth. So I thought it would be useful to talk a little bit about tipping customs in the United States. That is, what are the practices? What do people, how much do people tip? And who should you tip? And this is different in different countries. I'm going to talk a little bit about here in the United States in my experience. Other people may have different experiences. I got a little information from a website called tipping.org, tipping.org. Tipping, of course, is the noun that comes from the verb to tip. And tipping describes the action of giving someone money for helping you. Well, let's start with restaurants. If you come to the United States or if you go to an American restaurant, you are usually expected to give a tip. This is for any sort of restaurant in which you have to sit down and someone comes to help you, someone we would call the waiter, W-A-I-T-E-R, or the waitress, if it's a woman, W-A-I-T-R-E-S-S. This is not true for a fast food restaurant, a restaurant like McDonald's, for example, where you walk up and you order your food, you tell them what food you want, then you stand there and you wait, and then they give you your food. Nobody goes to your table with your food. nobody goes to your table to get your order. In those sorts of restaurants, you don't leave a tip because really no one is helping you very much. You have to get your own food. But in a regular restaurant where you sit down, you walk in, and you have the host or the hostess. The host, H-O-S-T, is a man. The hostess, with an E-S-S at the end of the word, is a woman. And that's the person who says hello to you when you walk in and asks you how many are there, how many of you are there, I should say. How many are in your party, they might say. Here, party, P-A-R-T-Y, just means your group. And they take you to a table and you sit down. And after a few hours, I mean a few minutes, your waiter comes and takes your order, asks you what kind of food you want. The host or hostess doesn't get a tip in an American restaurant. The only exception to that would be is if you are in a very nice restaurant and you don't have a reservation and you want to get a good seat, you want to get a good table, you may, sometimes people will give money to the host or the hostess and $10, $20, so they can get in front of other people who are waiting. I don't recommend doing that, but there are some people who do that. But normally the host or the hostess does not get a tip. The waiter or waitress does get a tip, and the amount depends on how good a restaurant it is. Normally we talk about tipping for restaurants, we talk about percentages. And a good percentage to think about is 15%. That's 15% of the total bill or the total check. So let's say you order two dinners and it costs $30 for the two dinners. That includes the tax. Well, then you would tip 15% on that. And 15% of $30, that's $4.50. And that's how much you would leave for the tip, either on the credit card statement or in cash. Either way is okay. Some restaurants, if you get very poor service, very bad service, you may only leave 10% or 5%. Or if you are in a very nice restaurant or you get really good service, when I say get good service, I mean the waiter or waitress is very helpful, gets your food quickly, asks you if you need anything else. That would be very good service. Then you may give them even more than 15, often 20%. Many people tip either 15 or 20%. It depends on the type of restaurant and whether they get good service or not. The same is true for a taxi driver. If you are taking a taxi in New York City, for example, or here in Los Angeles, you would probably give them 10 or 15%. So if it were $20, you would give them a $3 tip. 15% is pretty good. A bartender, the person in a bar that gives you your drinks, again, 15% is about right. Hairdressers, if you're going to get your hair cut, something I don't have to worry about anymore. And want to give them a tip, they do a good job, 15% is probably good for that. There are some people who we don't think about percentages, we think about just the amount of dollars. And there are certain people that help you that you don't think in percentage, you think in terms of a dollar, $2, $5. For example, when you go into a nice restaurant, there is often a place where you can put your coat and your umbrella or anything else that you don't want to take with you while you go and eat. And we call these little places coat checks. A coat, C-O-A-T, check, C-H-E-C-K. And a coat check is a place where you can check or leave your coat. And they give you a little ticket, and you can come back and get your coat or your jacket when you are done at the end of the night. Well, usually restaurants do not charge you money for that extra, but you still want to give a small tip to the person who is running the coat check stand, or the person who is in taking care of the coat check. Usually a dollar is enough for them. Maybe $2, but a dollar is usually okay. Now, if you are going to a hotel and you have someone help you with your bags, help you with your luggage, you come out of the taxi, and usually someone will come out, and we call that person traditionally a bellboy. It's often a man, but we say bellboy, B-E-L-L-B-O-Y, all one word. He's the person, could be a woman, but usually he is the person who helps you with your luggage, takes it in the hotel, may take it up to your room. Now, I'm one of those people who don't want people helping me with my luggage. I don't want the bellboy, so I usually just say no thank you. But if it's a very nice restaurant or a nice hotel, usually you let the bellboy help you. And again, there's no percentage you would give that person, but typically you would want to give them $1 or $2 for every piece of luggage or every bag that you have. So you have three bags, for example, or you and your wife or your husband has five bags total between you, you might give that person $5, $6, or $7 total. So about $1, maybe $1.50 per piece of luggage. If you're staying in a nice hotel, people sometimes also leave a tip for the maid. The maid, M-A-I-D, is the person who cleans your room. And you may want to leave $1 for every day that you stay there. Usually, you leave that the last day and you put it on the table next to your bed so they know that that's a tip. The final person that you may want to give a tip, well, two more people actually, the person in a nice hotel who gives you information, who helps you with making local reservations, getting a tour for you, that person we sometimes call the concierge. The concierge, C-O-N-C-I-E-R-G-E, is the man or woman who gives you information at a nice hotel and usually helps you make reservations and so forth, recommends good restaurants to you. That person you would also want to give a tip on the last day before you leave the hotel, usually $5 to $10 is okay for that person. Finally, you may go to a tour where you, for example, take a tour of the city of Los Angeles in one day. You get on a big bus and they take you to Venice Beach, which is close to where I am, about 5 minutes from here. Or they may take you to Hollywood or down to Disneyland or any of the other famous places here in Los Angeles. Jeff McQuillan's house, for example. Those kinds of tours usually have a tour guide, somebody who is telling you about the different places where you are visiting. And it's often common to give that person, who is sometimes the driver, he or she may be driving the bus and giving you the tour. Usually you give them a small tip, $5, maybe $10 if it was an all-day tour. That might be something that they will suggest to you, and it's always a good idea if you have a good driver or a good tour guide. If you go to a theater, the person that helps you to your seat or shows you to where you should sit is called an usher, U-S-H-E-R. And that person usually does not get a tip. We don't give money typically to ushers. So those are some tipping suggestions when you visit a hotel or a restaurant, at least in the United States. It may be different in Great Britain, in Australia, in other countries, but that's the general rule for most places here. Second topic we're going to talk about today is museums. And there are lots of famous museums here in the United States. Here in Los Angeles, I have talked about one of the museums in a previous cafe or podcast called the Getty, the G-E-T-T-Y, the Getty Museum. There are actually two museums, one with modern art and one with ancient art, ancient Greek and Roman art mostly. And there are many other types of museums. Most museums have what's called a permanent collection. Permanent, P-E-R-M-A-N-E-N-T. Permanent is the opposite of temporary. Permanent means that it is always there, that it's there at the museum, and you can always find it there, or they always have that painting there. They may not show it to the public, but they always have it. That's their permanent collection. That's what the museum owns. So in the Louvre in Paris, part of the permanent collection is the picture of the Mona Lisa by Leonardo da Vinci, and who wrote the Da Vinci Code, right? So the museums have their permanent connection or collections, and a collection, C-O-L-L-E-C-T-I-O-N, is just a name we give for all the pieces of art, the paintings, the sculptures, all the different types of art. We call that the collection. So the permanent collection is something that every museum has. There's also what are called temporary collections, or probably more often called temporary exhibitions. They may also be called traveling exhibitions. And an exhibition is like a special show where the museum brings art from other museums and from private owners of art and shows them to the public, usually for 2 or 3 months, maybe longer. Here in Los Angeles, for example, I think it was last summer, we had a traveling exhibit or exhibition, either word is okay, that was from the ancient Egyptian tomb or place of burial where you go when your body goes when you die, of King Tut, Tutankhamen, I believe is the full name in Egyptian. And that was a exhibit and the art that came here to Los Angeles. It was just here for a month or 2 months. Museums in the United States, even if they are public museums, are often cost money. Usually it's $10 or $15 a person to go into a museum. There are some museums that are free. The Getty Museum is free here in Los Angeles, but we also have a modern art museum. We have another museum called the Los Angeles County Museum of Art, and those museums charge an admission price. Admission, A-D-M-I-S-S-I-O-N, S-S-I-O-N, is the money you pay to get into somewhere. And that is usually the cost. I think the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York City, which is probably the greatest museum in the United States. If you go to New York City, you must go to the Metropolitan Museum of Art. It's sometimes just called the Met, M-E-T, the Met. They, I think, charge $10. I was there last year. I think that's how much the admission is. If it's a special exhibit, if it's a traveling exhibit, they may charge extra money to see that exhibit. I think I paid $25 or $30 to see the King Tut exhibit. So that's extra money. Well, let me say a little bit about some of the most famous museums in the United States. I've mentioned probably our best museum, which is the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York City, or the Met, we call it. It's one of the world's largest museums, like the British Museum in London or the Louvre in Paris. It's a very large museum, not as large as the Louvre or the British Museum, but has a very good collection of both art from all over the world, as well as from the United States. It is located in the center of New York City, in the area we call Manhattan. And it's an excellent museum if you ever have a chance to go there. New York City has several good museums. Another famous museum in New York City you will want to visit is called the Guggenheim Museum. Now, Guggenheim, G-U-G-G-E-N-H-E-I-M, is a name, was a family name. And there's actually several Guggenheim museums throughout the world. One of the most famous is in Bilbao, Spain, where there is a famous art museum building. There's also a famous one in New York City, and the building is also very interesting. It was a building that was designed or planned by one of the most famous architects in the United States. The architect was Frank Lloyd Wright. Outside of New York City, there are other famous museums, and of course, I can't name all of them, but some of the more famous ones are in Washington, D.C. There is actually a national or federal museums in Washington, D.C. And if you go to Washington, D.C., most of these museums are called Smithsonian Museums. Smithsonian is the name of several museums in Washington. There's the Smithsonian Museum of Air and Space. There's the Smithsonian National Museum of African Art. And there are several of these museums that are run by the federal government. They're called the Smithsonian Museums because the first person that gave money to start the museum was named James Smithson. And so now they're called the Smithsonian Museums. There is several different types of museums in Washington, D.C. that you can visit. There are also famous museums in other cities, Chicago and Boston. Both have very good art museums. There are some museums that have new buildings that you might want to see. Many of these museums have good collections of art, especially from the area where they are located. But the Chicago, the Boston Museum, the museums in Los Angeles, San Francisco, some pretty good museums there. If you're interested in going to museums, you might want to look at those if you ever visit those cities. Now let's answer a few questions. Well, our first question from Guillem in Mallorca, the island in the Mediterranean Sea. He wants to know why I sometimes pronounce the letter A as A, and sometimes I pronounce it as A. I think I've answered this question before, but often when I speak slowly, or when we speak slowly in English, we sometimes pronounce the words a little differently. The word A, or A, can be pronounced either way. When I'm speaking fast, and when people speak fast, they usually will say "ah." I want a piece of ham. I want a piece of ham. But if I said it slowly, I may say I want a piece of ham, especially if I wanted to emphasize or to call your attention to something. Speaking more slowly, we will often use A instead of A. I know I do. Erica in Lithuania has a question about the difference between comfortable and convenient. What does it mean to be comfortable, and what does it mean to be, or for something to be, convenient? Let's start with comfortable, comfortable. Comfortable comes from the verb to comfort, and to comfort someone means to make them feel relaxed, to make them feel pleasurable, to make them feel good. That's to comfort someone. Sometimes we use that verb to comfort when someone is crying, for example. They're very sad. Maybe their father died or something bad happened. You can comfort them. You can try to make them feel better. Comfortable means, as an adjective, something that makes you feel better, something that is nice for you and is makes you feel good. For example, you can describe a chair as comfortable if you sit down and, oh, it's a nice chair, you relax. That's a comfortable chair. An uncomfortable chair with the UN in front, uncomfortable means not comfortable. That would be the chair I'm sitting in right now, not comfortable. Convenient, C-O-N-V-E-N-I-E-N-T. Convenient means that it usually means it is something easy for you to do or an easy place for you to go, something that doesn't cause you a lot of problems. We don't talk about chairs as being convenient. Convenient has to do with things like, for example, the grocery store. I have a grocery store that is only 5 minutes from my house if I walk. That's very convenient. The grocery store is convenient. It is close to me. It is easy for me to use. So convenience has to do with things that usually are easy for you to go to or easy for you to use. It doesn't require you require a lot of extra work from you. So comfortable is feeling good, and convenient is easy to use. So thank you, Erica, for that question. Sometimes we use both of those words together. It's a comfortable, convenient hotel. It means it's a nice hotel with nice rooms, and it's close, for example, to the downtown area. That would be comfortable and convenient. Jean René from Quebec wants to know the difference between the expression I used to, U-S-E-D, to, T-O, and I used to, U-S-E, with no D. What's the difference between he used to or I used to do something and I used to do something without the D? Well, it's hard to hear the difference because the D and the T come together when we pronounce it quickly. And because of that reason, when you see it written, some people will write it incorrectly. And I probably have done that myself because it's a very easy mistake to make. The correct form is with the D, USEDTO, used to. I say correct form because if you look in a grammar book, that's what it will tell you. Although the language is changing, all languages change as people change and use them differently. And this particular used to with a D and without a D is so common now, so common that people don't write the D, that I think many people would consider it acceptable to do either way. There's no difference in meaning, certainly, but the most formal way, the way that would most grammar books would tell you is that there should be a D there when you spell it. Now, when you pronounce it, there's no difference. Used to, the D and the T sounds come together as one. Finally, Jean-René has a question about the expression which I use a lot, which is, of course. Of course. What does that mean? Of course means usually that what you are saying or what you are about to say is obvious. It's something that you should know already. It's something that isn't necessary to say, really, because you know it already. So, for example, you might say, it is a beautiful day here in Los Angeles. Of course, it's always beautiful here in Los Angeles. The of course in that example means it's not necessary for me to say it. You already know it's always beautiful here in Los Angeles. So thank you, Jean-René, for your questions. Well, that's all we have time for today. Remember to come back to our next ESL podcast and next week to our ESL Cafe. From Los Angeles, California, I'm Jeff McQuillan. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on the English Cafe. ESL Podcast English Cafe is written and produced by Dr. Jeff McQuillan. This podcast is copyright 2006 by the Center for Educational Development.